The following program, The Kitchen Table Progressives, is sponsored by The Kitchen Table Progressives and to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of News Web Radio Company or its management.
Welcome to another edition of Kitchen Table Progressive for this Palm Sunday, March 24th, 2024. Paul Richardson here, inviting you to join us around the table for an hour of casual conversation on law, civics, and politics, driving the current issues, where the menu is progressive and the table menus are unapologetically liberal. This week on the program, House Republicans are one seat away of squandering their majority. I predicted this would happen. Just, you know, the whole thing with Kevin McCarthy. And now Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to vacate the speakership of Mike Johnson. I'll go for it. What was it? Wisconsin Representative Mike Gallagher said that he was walking out, Republican, and too late to have a special election to fill his seat. So, yeah. There's one left to go. I think even odds that Hakeem Jeffries could be the speaker by the election. These guys are going to totally squirt it away. Well, Trump has to put a $453 million bond by 5 o'clock tomorrow, or Letitia James is going to start confiscating, taking possession of Trump properties. It's just unbelievable. I have not heard that he's put up the bond or has the money or who's going to give it to him. I heard the RNC was going to do so, but then I've then heard no. They don't have anywhere near that kind of money. Will he come up with the money? And where will he get it? That's just going to be an interesting proposition here. Now, True Social, the Trump social media is going to merge Digital World Acquisition Corporation, which is supposed to be a billion-dollar merger. And so Trump's saying, I'm worth $1 billion. Well, not so fast. No, he can't spend any of it. It's on paper. He can't spend it, right? I mean, otherwise, it's not a merger anymore. It's not a corporation anymore. That doesn't work that way. He just wants to say he's worth that much money, and that's why he's in. But Trump suggests Marco Rubio for vice president, and again, Rubio said he would be honored to accept the nomination. But here's another one. Again, not so fast. Oh, it's that pesky Constitution again. The 12th Amendment says this. And this surprises me, by the way, that he would say that. First of all, it doesn't surprise me that Trump would say that. He's trying to Trump is trying to galvanize the Hispanic vote by, you know, nominating Rubio. But the problem with it is, and I'm surprised that Rubio said he'd be honored, but maybe he would be, except he can't, because the 12th Amendment says this. The electors shall meet in the respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be inhabitant of the same state with themselves. Well, Marco Rubio and Donald Trump are both from Florida, so maybe Marco Rubio would be honored, but I'm sorry, the 12th Amendment, that doggone Constitution again, will not allow that. Although maybe the Supreme Court would, maybe John Roberts would say, well, now just a minute. The Constitution doesn't say that he can't be nominated. It just says the electors can't vote for him. I mean, that would be a John Roberts kind of very serious way of putting things. I wanted to talk about this. Just let me get past this. Just a minute here. I want to get to this. Maybe if I have time in the third segment. Do you know how the data? This is Palm Sunday. Do you know how Easter is calculated? How we calculate the date when Easter is? And even more interesting, do you know the real reason why Jesus was crucified? I will tell you that. It is known. It's not found in the Bible. It is known. Although the Bible does allude to some of the facts, but it doesn't expressly say why Jesus was crucified. But believe you me, it all comes down to politics. Yep, it sure does. I have to say something. I was listening to WCPT yesterday, and there was a caller who called up and said to the host, well, it was Edwin's show, Eisendrath's show, and said, you know, you liberals are delighting in the downfall of a great man. I thought you guys were supposed to be so caring. I love when people on the other side say that you're supposed to be bleeding hearts. You're supposed to be, you know, warm and fuzzy all the time. And how you delight in the downfall of a great man. First of all, he's not a great man. But here's the thing. Donald Trump, his downfall is all his own doing. What is going on right now with him, with his properties and this half a billion dollar bond that he has to, and the $91 billion that he already had to pay for the E. Jean Carroll case. This is all stuff he did on his own before he was president. This is not taking down a great figure. And by the way, the trial, the business fraud trial that Judge Engoron presided over was his own choice. His legal team said they wanted a bench trial, not a jury trial. The bench trial means the judge is both the trier of fact as the jury and also the arbiter of law. He decides what the law is and what the facts are. That's what a bench trial is. And Judge Engoron said the facts shock the conscience. That's a legal term, by the way. Shock the conscience is a legal phrase, not a term. It's a phrase that means the facts are so, well, it means what it says, are so shocking that it's undeniable. The guilt is undeniable. He's done it to himself. So if that listener is listening tonight, I'll have different responses to what you have to say than what the other host did. But that's my major so far. And the E. Jean Carroll case also was his own doing. And a jury said so. And by the way, it does say in the Constitution, in the Seventh Amendment, the findings of a jury shall not be questioned. The facts shall not be questioned in any other court. So the jury found those facts to be, that's what they found. He did it to himself. He defamed and raped E. Jean Carroll. That's what Donald Trump did. And now he's asking someone to pay his $453 million bond? Okay, who's going to do it? I don't know how this is going to turn out. But, the first thing I heard was the RNC. But the RNC, as far as I know, understand. I've asked people; they say no. They have no way to have that kind of bread. They can't come up with that kind of cash. And why would they? Then somebody said no. They're wanting to pay his legal bills. Well, this will be interesting, okay? Because Trump wants to delay all the trials and the 91. Okay, sorry, it's 85 criminal counts now. Six of them were dismissed in the Georgia case, so it's technically 85 criminal counts. Somebody said, not 91, it's 85. Oh, excuse me, as Steve Martin used to say. It's 85. Okay, so here's the great part. You delay all the trials, so we don't get to have the trial until after the election. Any of these trials are likely not to be concluded, although Alvin Bragg is pushing for it. The campaign finance fraud case, or campaign finance violations, the so-called hush money case, but it's campaign finance violations. That case may actually get started because Alvin Bragg is going to give the Trump team 30 days to review the documents that were dumped late. It's not going to start tomorrow, 25th. It's going to start on, I don't know, maybe next in April or maybe the beginning of May. But that one may go. Okay, so this is all Trump's doing. This is not him. In other words, Donald Trump is not a tragic figure. You know what a tragic figure is? A tragic figure is like from literature. A tragic figure is a person who has, you know, some maybe redeeming qualities, but they have what's called a tragic flaw that brings them down, you know? Like Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was kind of a tragic figure. Richard Nixon actually was he had some very good qualities. Richard Nixon did some good things. And I think he was actually probably not a bad guy. He was a Republican, but he did create some good programs. He created the EPA. He created SSI, Supplemental Security Income, for people who were late in life and didn't have Social Security, especially women who had not worked out of the home and maybe were divorced from a previous husband and were not entitled to their survivor's benefits. SSI helped them out, helps a lot of people, helps a lot of disabled people who have been disabled since birth and maybe have never established a work record. And so if you're not eligible, don't become eligible for Social Security or Social Security disability, and SSI is a really important thing. Richard Nixon established that. But Richard Nixon was kind of paranoid, you know? He was, and that's what led to the whole Watergate thing. Richard Nixon did not order the break-in, the Watergate break-in. He was part of the cover-up. That was his thing, the cover-up, because he was paranoid that he had enemies and so on. And that was his problem. He had that. So I wanted to go also into the there was an idea that the Republicans with the election are going to try and not certify the election in various states
not so fast.
I talked to Tom Hartman about this earlier. He was suggesting that. And here's the problem that I see with that. Let's look at how it's in Article 2 of the Constitution. It talks about how the president is elected. Article 2, Section 1, and the begins by, it says, this is how the president shall be elected. It starts out like this.
Section 1, in such manner.
Each state shall appoint. I have read this. Many times in this program. It's very important. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. Okay. They shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct. All right? So since 1880, as I've said on this program before also, the way in which the state legislatures, all of the state legislatures have directed, is that a popular vote of the people shall determine how the electors are appointed by the popular vote. When the popular vote is certified, that's what tells you which slate of electors will go to the state capitol to elect the president and vice president. So, in Illinois, it's true. There are Democratic slates of electors, and there's a Republican slate of electors. Once the popular vote in the state is certified, that entitles only one of those slates to go to the state capitol and elect the president and vice president. Now, those electors are not constitutionally bound to vote if it's a Democratic state electors slate. They don't have to vote for Biden, but that's kind of their promise. And if it's the Republican slate of electors, if Illinois were to go Republican and Trump won, they've promised to vote for Trump, but they don't have to. They're not constitutionally bound. If they didn't, they'd probably be in trouble back in the state where they, you know, they couldn't be punished necessarily constitutionally, but they'd probably be, you know, they wouldn't have a lot of friends, okay? So, but here, the 12th Amendment, this is what they're hoping, is that if you don't certify the vote, it'll kick it to a 12th Amendment crisis, and it goes to the House of Representatives, and each state only gets one vote. So, in other words, Illinois has a majority Democratic caucus, that the representatives from Illinois, the U.S. congressional representatives, more of them controlled by Democrats, and so they probably vote for Biden. Same with Washington State. Now you take Missouri, different story. Their congressional caucuses are dominated by is dominated by Republicans, and their one vote would be for the Republican would be for Trump. But here's what the 12th Amendment says. It says the person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president if such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed. Now, you see, that's the key. If the vote isn't certified, then the state doesn't appoint any electors, right? That's what it takes to appoint, and therefore it doesn't contribute to the total, the sum total of electors. Nowadays, the sum total of electors, the total possible is 538. And so what you need to get a majority of those is 270. But think about this. In Florida, in 2000, Florida was in, you know, and they may have not been able to certify because of all the hanging chads and so on. And so they weren't able to pick a slate of electors. Okay? So that means that they didn't contribute to the whole of the majority. Okay, so we can get back into that a little bit later, and we'll take your calls coming up here at 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278, and we'll be right back. Here we are back again on Kitchen Table Progressive here for Sunday evening, March 24th, Palm Sunday. Hope you're doing well. And I'm always happy to be with here with you. Enjoy talking with you. Let me just finish up my point about the electors. As I said, the total number of possible electors appointed if all of the states appoint their electors is 538, because there are 438 members of the House and 100 members of the Senate. And the total number of your electors are for your state are the number of representatives, U.S. congressional representatives you have, and your number of senators, which is 2. So even in the smallest state like Vermont or Wyoming, who only have, they only have one representative, they have 2 senators, so they get 2 votes there. So that's 2 electors and 1 for the representative. So that's 3. So every state gets at least 3 electoral votes, right? Okay. So in Florida, and this is a good example, is before Florida, if Florida would not have been able to certify their vote, they would not have been able to add their 29 electors to the total. They wouldn't have not been able to add it to the 538. So the total number of electors would have been 509. And of those 509, Al Gore had 267, which is not 270, but it is a majority of the total number of electors appointed. And George W. Bush had 242, so he lost. He was losing by, 25 electors. He lost. But Al Gore, had, of those electors appointed, had 52.5% of them. So Gore would have won. But the Supreme Court stepped in and made sure that Florida could certify so that then say, oh, well, then, and Bush won because they stopped counting the votes while Bush was ahead. So that's how that happened. Okay, so let's get to some calls here. And our friend Jim in Chicago is up first. Jim, how you doing?
Hi, Paul. I know that his voters think he can walk on water, and I think it might be possible he wears those gym shoes and wades into a pond, because I think they're buoyant enough to do it. The other thing I was thinking, he better not wear any jewelry going to court. If I was him, I'd look disheveled. Look like there's no way I could pay this back. But what I find interesting, his son-in-law got $3 billion from the Saudis, checking that off. And I think the Saudis might turn him into another Tachobi. They might chop him up. If he lent the $2 billion to Trump, they might just chop him up and And forget about it. We won't be able to find Kushner. I mean, that's interesting that he won't put up the money.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
yeah, well, but here's the thing: is how do you give somebody?
He got to be. Because his father was elected president. That's the reason they gave him the money. It's obvious.
Yeah, I know, but how do you give somebody that kind of money? How do you give somebody that kind of money? With number one, you have to pay a gift tax on it, and the recipient has to pay if it's over a certain amount, which I think is for us little folk is $17,000 now. You have to pay anything over $17,000, and by the way, I think $453 million is a little more than $70,000. You have to pay taxes on it, income tax on that.
And I'm sure Putin is itching to give him the money. He'd be delighted to give him the money, sure. The money somehow. But that'd be such a dramatic departure from reality that I don't think any reporter would miss that.
What do you think is going to happen tomorrow? Jim, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow?
I think he'll have to file bankruptcy like every normal person would have to do one of these circumstances.
But you can
bring it down. In other words, what normally would happen in these cases, you liquidate everything.
Yeah.
You only pay a dime on a dollar, and whatever they can scrape up, that's what they'll pay. That's the way it's going to end. That's the only way it can end. But what about his coattails? What do you think about his coattails in this election, Paul? I think we have a good chance of maybe bagging the Senate. And I also think his play for Rubio, I think Florida might be in play in secret. God is my witness. Yeah. I mean it.
I think it is. Yeah, because, well, I think you're right. With the Senate's going to be tough for the Democrats, but honestly, if it looks this bad, I just can't believe America is just this brain dead that they would close.
I can't see any coattails, and I just expect but you said that you didn't think the turnout would be that great. That kind of puzzled me because I thought, you know, the Democrats should come out really strong in this one. But
I don't think the turnout will be as high as it was. I don't think
it was.
Biden will get 81 million again. I think he might get, you know, he might get over 70 million. He might get 74 million this time. And that, but I don't think Trump's going to get 60 million. I don't. And remember, the high watermark for previous to Donald Trump's in 2020, Mitt Romney got 62.5 million in 2016. That was the most any Republican had ever gotten. So for Donald Trump to repeat that, he didn't get in 2016. That's about what Trump got in 2016. It was about 62.5, but he got about the same as Romney got. Yeah, in 2012.
Right. You think because of the pandemic, it was gay, hey? What?
Well, the thing is, everybody voted by mail. And that's the way to get turnout. And I don't see, that's the thing, is the people won't vote because the pandemic is kind of behind us now, so to speak. And they won't vote by mail the way they did because Republicans, remember when I had Professor Hershey on, I asked her, okay, if Barack Obama got 70 million votes in 2008, Joe Biden got 81 million. That's 11 million more than 70. That's a smaller percentage than the 12. When Trump got 74 million, that's 12 million more than 62 million. So actually, Trump got a bigger bounce out of the mail-in vote, even though he complained about it. And the professor said, yeah, everybody knows that Republicans have always voted because it's all these seniors and a lot of them are Republicans. And it's like they've always voted by mail. And so what's he trying to kill his he's trying to kill the goose that laid the golden egg or whatever.
right, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, Paul, great show as always, and have a good week, buddy. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. Thanks very much. Yeah, I don't know. I hope Biden gets 81 million again. But I think just because of that, I think people, you know, when they go back to voting, and you know, it's if you didn't turn in your ballot, you know, to mail in, although, you know, Democrats might be used to it now. And I tell you what, of course, we voted for It's been 20 years we've been voting by mail. So I'm not worried about it. I just get my thing. I get my ballot. I fill it out. I turn it back in. I don't even know when election day is. I don't care. Okay, so okay, let's go to Dave. Dave in Hoffman Estates. Dave, how are you doing today?
Hey, Paul. Yeah, you're talking about how Kushner got that $2 billion from the Saudis. Wasn't there a thing they talked about the time that he may have sent over some thumb drives from that computer they find? I believe they found it at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. The ones know, that the one that the pool man he drained the pool into the computer room.
It's something that order, yeah. But they had suspected that there were some thumb drives that were missing or something like that. So, and yeah, maybe like it could have been on Israeli defense or whatever the you know for the Saudis. But
that's interesting. And, yeah,
you know that kind of went down real quiet in that there. But, you know, that was all during that time when them records and everything were laid out on the floor and that when they had those pictures and
right
and that. And, yeah, when you mentioned on Nixon, he took us off the gold standard and yeah. He's the one that gave us HMOs, you know, for medical. Yeah. And yeah. And the caller you were talking about, I won't dignify his name, but he did that for a while with Dick Kaye. And you know, he tried locking horns with Dick. Well, Dick had all that institutional memory and everything that, you know, he had. It was like a boy going against a man there, you know, so. Right. And don't they, these megaphones like that, don't they seem like they're the ones that are the snowflakes, the way they whine and cry, you know?
Well, no question, no doubt about it. And the thing is I always thought that, I've always heard that, the right wing say that the Democrats are always victims, especially people of color, right? Oh, they're all victims. I mean, yeah. I hear that.
You can't go a day without listening to Trump whine and moan about how, you know, he's, you know, but what I was going to talk about was that earlier in the week, they had the former generals, Milley and then former General McKenzie. Kenneth McKenzie, they were in front of the Congress testifying about that Afghanistan with that Abbey Gate. And General McKenzie was the last one that was the commander there, and he said that, you know, he bears the blame. He said, not the president. You know, of course, the right always wants to blame President Biden and that, but there was a thread about it where it says a couple of points here. Trump, not Biden, negotiated directly with the Taliban and excluded the Afghan government from the negotiations that time.
That's right.
Trump, not Biden, facilitated the release of 5,000 Afghan fighters that were from the prison, and they were able to get back out on the battlefield again and fight the Americans.
Yep.
Trump, not Biden, wanted to invite the Taliban to the Camp David on the anniversary of 9/11.
Right.
Trump, not Biden, refused to brief the incoming administration team on the situation in Afghanistan.
Yep.
And then Trump, not Biden, boasted that the troop withdrawal he set in motion could not be stopped.
That's right.
And he said, let's not forget, Trump had left President Biden and less than like 2,000 troops at the time. He had withdrew all of them on, and that he had set the original date was at March 31st, and well, President Biden at least got them to extend it to May that time.
Right.
But so I'd have to say that Afghanistan, Trump bears most of about 95% of the failure of that, you know. And that,
The withdrawal, yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah, he did. Go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then also like about a week before that, after when General Milley was retiring out, and he gave that one good fired up speech in that, and where he said that Trump, and referring to him as a wannabe dictator and all of that, and Trump accused Milley of treason. I mean, really? This man is going to accuse a decorated, honorable former Special Forces soldier You know, he earned his medals that were on his chest. He didn't have some mole come running up on the stage and giving him a store-bought Purple Heart, you know, that. And he wanted that purple. He said, oh, I always wanted one of them back when.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. You know what? I'd love to have you go out and earn one, you know. If you're welcome to go out and earn one. But you got to take the heat for it. You got it.
And he, because he was on that radio show, drawing a blank right now, the one in New York, where he said that the 80s was his personal Vietnam because he didn't get sexually transmitted disease.
Oh, that's actually,
Howard
by the way.
Howard Stern.
And that was the thing that, you know, my dad was, he stopped voting Republican. He voted for Barack Obama. He said to my sister, who's a Republican, said, he liked Ronald Reagan, but he was more of an Eisenhower Republican. But when he saw that in the newspaper that VD was Trump's personal Vietnam, my dad on Father's Day got so disgusted. He brought it up. I was shocked the dad brought it up at a family gathering because people have different persuasions in the family. But he picked up the newspaper. He said, did you see this? He goes, this makes me sick. And he threw the paper down. And because my dad lost his brother in World War II, you know, it's like, and now you're going to say that he just found that so disgusting that, man, he said, and my sister said, well, Dad, you're not going to vote for Hillary, are you? And he said, honey, I am not going to vote for Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a punk. And,
my brother-in-law, who was a Vietnam veteran, he said he totally lost any kind of respect to even thinking of voting for him after he besmirched John McCain.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing that I was thinking about when yesterday when the caller was on and saying that when they're talking about COVID is didn't Trump call it the China virus, right? Well, isn't that an attack on the United States? And therefore, when he starts talking blaming Fauci, it's like, you're the commander in chief. The buck stops at your desk. If the COVID really was an attack on our country, then what did you do? He acted against blue state governors by stopping them from getting masks and
equipment.
He intercepted it. Remember those shipments that he intercepted, the federal government intercepted? Yeah.
Yeah, then did they also get some kind of a bunch of the masks from Korea that were no good?
discount
that time, he bought, I don't know, was it half a million of those masks?
Yeah, he probably had a stock in the company. I mean, that's why undoubtedly.
Well,
yeah,
Like when he had that bout when he thought he was Superman and he had his hit with COVID, he had that he had some stock in that drug, Remdesivir or something like that.
Oh, the company that
produced that.
Where they gave him the antibodies, yeah. Which, by the way, that stuff is super duper expensive. It's very expensive. I mean, not everybody could get that. That's a very expensive technology.
You think Don Jr. got some of that when he had got the COVID? Probably.
Probably. These guys are too much. But he not only did he if he called it the China virus, then it was attacking our country. Then he was the one who's responsible for a million deaths. He's the one who didn't prevent a million deaths.
What does it always say about this guy? Though he projects.
You know,
it's all
whatever he did.
It ain't him, man.
Well, that's what my dad always called a punk, my dad used to call it a hood. I'd say a punk, and I always used to ask him, "Well, what's that?" And he'd say, "Is that a chip on his shoulder?" And I'd say, "When I was little, I'd say, what does that mean, Dad?" And he'd say, "It means that he thinks that everybody's against him, and that's why he has a right to do whatever he wants." I said, "Oh, really?" Yeah, that's exactly right.
Like when you mentioned about your dad and that, like with my parents, my mother and father, they were the Depression era ones, and they were diehard FDR. You know, my dad did that, the CCC camps and the WPA, and then he went in the Army and that, and they adored FDR. So
yeah, Yeah, that's
so the way the gates swung at our house, you know, and that, and so. But well, I suppose I shouldn't tie it up much longer if you got some other caller waiting. So.
Okay, Dave. Thanks. I appreciate your call.
Yeah, likewise. We'll talk again. All right. Be well, Paul.
Okay. Sure. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. When we come back, by the way, still take calls if you want to, 773-763-9278. But I will share with you a favorite story of mine, which is how Easter got to be Easter and why Jesus was crucified, the real reason, when we come back. Paul Richardson here, Kitchen Table Progressive, finishing up here for a Sunday evening, March 24th. And let's get right back to the phones here. We've got Alvin wants to talk about the election. Alvin, you're on the air. How you doing? Thanks for calling. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I listen to Seth Miller and Tom Hartman. I hear you call in.
Yeah, I know. Stephanie says, Alvin! Right?
Yeah. Hey, I grew up in Mississippi, so I didn't hear it at that time.
Yeah.
Had I grown up in the north, I would have heard it all the time.
Right.
I grew up in the south, you know, didn't know anything about it because we don't have a couple of smoke.
Right.
There was CBS, and NBC. You had to have cable. Yeah.
Right. It wasn't on.
If you didn't have cable, you didn't have ABC.
Right.
So that's how I grew up. But now, you know, I got everything. But Clarence Thomas passed to go. HA triple S. He has to go.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, he has to go. But, man, I'm going to send you a shirt that I'm going to make personally that he has to go. And I'm going to give one to Richard.
I like it.
To the family meeting.
Right.
And to you. It's going to be hand done. So, thank you.
Okay. All right. He has to go.
Keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. I love your show. And, blue all the way.
All righty.
Blue all the way.
Okay. Thank you.
Take my call.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Thanks for calling. Yeah. Okay. Great. Let me get into what I was going to say about Easter here. I'll have to kind of go fast here. How Easter, you know how Easter is determined when Easter is? Easter is the Sunday. After the first full moon of the spring equinox. Okay, so spring came in last Tuesday, the 19th, a little bit early. So the full moon is actually the 25th at 3 a.m. Actually, so it's tonight when we go to bed after midnight when it turns 3 a.m. is the full moon at 3 a.m. tonight. So the next Sunday is Easter, okay? So technically, Easter could be, the earliest it could possibly be, would be, I think, the 21st of March. If the equinox came in on the 19th and the 20th was the full moon, then the 21st, and that was a Saturday, the 21st of Easter. Okay, so Easter used to be coordinated with the Passover because it's based on when Jesus went to Jerusalem but it's not anymore. The Jewish and Christian calendars are not aligned anymore. Okay, so what happened? What was the Passover festival? The Passover festival was to celebrate Passover, and it happens is coordinated with the moon, the same thing, and the full moon. But so what? How did Easter happen? Well, Jesus came to Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, as we that's the tradition, and he was going to give his grand sermon in the forecourt of the temple, right? Of course, he planned to give this grand sermon. He had a number of followers at this point, quite a few. But what happened instead? He made his temple raid, right? He got to the temple, the forecourt, and found the money changers' tables, right? And this really made him angry. Which, by the way, he turned over the money changers' tables. It made me wonder, as I've thought about this over the years, had he never been to the Passover festival before? Because wouldn't everybody knows? By the way, this was, Jerusalem is a small town, about a little more than two square miles at the time. So about a mile and a half by a mile and a half square. About 300,000 people came, and the rich people stayed at the inns in the city, and the regular folks just camped out on the Mount of Olives. It's a camping party. It was out there with campfires and kids running around, just like out on the Mount of Olives. Thousands, tens of thousands of people out there camped. And Jesus was going to speak, but he turned over the money changers' tables. And, but by the way, was probably not a very big incident. He probably turned over a few tables. And for the most part, it was most people who were there didn't even know anything happened, because the grounds of the temple were, that's said to be 25 football fields large. It was, but which is a football field is a 1 1/3 acres. So this is about, the grounds of the temple is about 33 acres. So a skirmish like this probably really didn't, you know, raise much of an eyebrow. I mean, it was like a fight you'd at a street fair, or, you know, Bite of Chicago. If the fight broke out, most people wouldn't even know that it happened.
And Jesus so
there were money changers' tables, and why everybody knew that there was is because there was no Roman money allowed inside the temple, and that's where you went to get your lamb slaughtered, right? So it's like a church carnival. You've got to buy tokens, right? You got to buy tokens. And that's how you go on the rides and get concessions, right? And the church kind of skims off a little bit, and they when you change money, they make a profit on the currency exchange, essentially. Okay, so the only money that could be in the temple was gold or silver. So they took the denariuses outside and gave you tokens to spend inside. And this made Jesus very angry. So he had his raid, and the problem is what Jesus said during his temple raid. And he said, you have turned my father's house into a den of robbers. This is the thing that got him in trouble. Not because it was, you know, that was an insult to the temple, but because of what had happened the year before. The year before, there was a rebellion. And there was a rebellion because Pontius Pilate and the chief priest Caiaphas were in cahoots for a construction project. Because Pontius Pilate was a low-level, you know, politician, and what he was trying to do was take bribes and make money and increase his wealth so that he could run for the Senate. He was what was called the knight class, a class of upper middle class type person, and he wasn't rich enough to run for the Senate. So where was he going to make money in Judea? Well, the only place there was money was in the temple. So he's got to get his hands on some of it. So he offered to bring an aqueduct from the Jordan River into Jerusalem, and also running water through the temple so they could have a purification pool, because they couldn't have a swimming pool, like a standing water. The Jewish tradition says it has to be running water, so you could baptize people inside the temple. Well, this meant that there was going to be Roman workers inside the temple, and this caused a rebellion. And you see, this was in the year 28. Jesus was crucified, we think, in 29. And so when he said, you've turned my father's house into a den of robbers, it wasn't them turning over a few tables, is that they thought, oh, he's trying to dredge up the rebellion stuff again. It was a bloody put down. Pilate brought his forces out and killed people. Actually, they were disguised like Jews. They got in amongst them, and they had these war clubs, and they beat a lot of people to death. And remember Barabbas, the one they were going to release instead of Jesus? Well, he was being held for murder, probably for murdering Roman soldiers. He was part of it. So that's why the crowd probably really didn't care if they released him. Yeah, he helped murder some Romans. But that was the issue. And that's why this is why Jesus. So when he was on trial, when he went before Pontius Pilate, Pontius Pilate asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Now, why did he ask him that? And Jesus never said that he was, right? He never said that openly. He only said, where would he have gotten that? Well, he would have gotten that, probably the question is, what did Judas betray? How did Judas betray Jesus? Well, if you look at Matthew chapter 19, verse 28, it says that those of you who follow, you who followed me shall become the judges of the 12 tribes of Israel. This he was speaking to Judas at the same time because the 12 were there. And so you follow me, I am your king, right? And you will be the judges. So he's implying he's the king of the Jews. And along with the idea that he's trying to dredge up this rebellion, people thought that's why they thought he was trying to dredge up the rebellion, is because Judas betrayed him and said, this is who he thinks he is. Because he was asked, if you look at the Gospel of Luke, chapter 22, verse 70, they ask him, so then are you the, they ask him, are you the Messiah? And Jesus said, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. And if I asked you, you would be silent. You wouldn't answer. And they said, well, then are you the Son of God? And he said, you say I am. So he never openly admits that either, right? So then how does it come up when he finally gets before Pilate? Pilate says, are you the King of the Jews? Ah, that's because that's what Judas betrayed. So after the temple raid, they couldn't leave the city because it was in the daytime. And Jesus, they had put out the APB, the all points bulletin for this guy. So they couldn't get out through through the city gates because they were watching for him. So they had to wait until nighttime and go under the cover of darkness. That's why they had the Last Supper, the Passover Supper, in the upper room. Then they left the city and went back out to the Mount of Olives to Gethsemane. That's where Jesus and his apostles were camped. So they needed Judas to tell them, to show them where Jesus was. Because if you didn't know and you went outside the city walls, all you would see is the Mount of Olives and campfires everywhere and kids running all over the place. You wouldn't know, where do we find them? You would have to have a guide. And so this isn't in the Gospels, but it's very well-known history. It's been put together by historians, Roman historians, as to the reason that Jesus was crucified. And Jesus was about 33. We think Jesus was born somewhere between 6 and 4 BC, BCE. BCE means before common era, and CE means common era. Okay, so we used to say BC and AD. That's wrong. I mean, before Christ, Jesus could not be born before Christ. I mean, that was not accurate. So, because Jesus was born in probably 5 BC, if he was crucified when he was 33. And then the word AD does not mean after death. Otherwise, we'd have about 33 years missing in our calendar, right? It's like, well, what happened between the year 1 and 33? No, the AD means Anno Domini, which means in Latin for in the year of our Lord. That's what AD means, Anno Domini. So it's BCE, it means before common era, and CE means common era, which is, I think they'd established this by... I'm not sure when they established these designations, but remember, there's no year zero. So you went 4 BC, 3 BC, 2 BC, 1 BC, and then you had the year 1, the year 1 CE. So that's how it's designated. So anyway, a little bit of information that maybe you haven't heard before. I won't be here next weekend, but we will have an exciting replay of great interview I had about a month ago. Very worthwhile listening to again. So I will invite you to have a wonderful Easter and see you the week afterwards. And as always, join us again every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. immediately following the family meeting for Kitchen Table Progressive. Your host, Paul Richardson, here with you. Always a joy being with you for exciting conversation on law, civics, and politics. And we will see you next time here on AM 820 WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, where facts matter, at heartlandsignal.com.